Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Podplay. Hi everyone and welcome to the podcast Jägaren with me Daniel Da Silva. Today I'm going to speak English because my guest is from Denmark and my Danish really suck, so it's better to do it in English. Her name is Stephanie and she's a bow hunter from Denmark. And I have so many questions about bow hunting and so many other things because I know that Stephanie has been in different countries hunting. She loves buck hunting, goose hunting. She's been in Africa, in the States, in Poland, and so on. So we have so much to talk about. But before we do that, here's some words from our main sponsor, Chevalier.
Då sitter jag mitt emot Johanna som bland annat är hållbarhetsansvarig på Chevalier, eller hur?
Ja, men precis.
Och idag så ska vi prata om skötsel av kläder.
Ja.
Vad ska man tänka på för att kläderna ska hålla sig så fräscha och intakta som möjligt, så länge som möjligt?
Inledningsvis skulle jag säga att tvätta så lite som möjligt. Mm. Tvätta bara plagg verkligen när det behövs. Är det någon liten fläck så tvätta bara bort just den fläcken och vädra plaggen.
Mm.
Det mår de jättebra av.
Men ibland så är man ju superskitig. Man kanske har passat ett djur eller bara liksom krypit i lera. Och sådär. Då räcker det inte bara liksom skrapa lite grann.
Nej, verkligen inte. Och då är det jättebra om man tar bort så mycket som möjligt av den lösa lorten innan man stoppar in i tvättmaskinen.
Mm.
För att det följer med in i tvättmaskinen, det gynnar inte plagget.
Nej. Eller tvättmaskinen.
Nej, precis. Nej. Så ta bort det och sen så tänker du på att stänga dragkedjor, knappar, kardborreband eller andra lösningar som finns. Tvätta gärna plagget ut och in.
Mm.
Och sen lite tvättmedel. Och så följer du skötselråden på plagget.
Ska man ha något speciellt tvättmedel eller funkar vad som helst?
Det är klart att ett skonsamt, lite milt tvättmedel är jättebra för tekniska plagg. Men det största misstaget de flesta gör det är ju att ha för mycket tvättmedel.
Mm.
För det är nog att allt tvättmedel försvinner när man har tvättat klart plagget.
Och när man har tvättat det då är det bara att köra och köra på?
Nej, när du har tvättat det och så har du torkat det, då är det väldigt bra om man återaktiverar impregneringen så man får tillbaka att vattnet rinner av igen.
Hur gör man det då?
Bäst resultat tycker jag man får, det är att stryka plagget. På låg, torr värme, så gärna med någon duk, en trasa emellan.
Så en plupp på strykjärnet och så något emellan och så stryka på lite.
Precis, igen. Precis. Och har man använt plagget länge och slitit på det mycket så kan man ju behöva återpåfylla impregneringen också.
Hur gör man det?
Det finns i de flesta välsorterade sport- och fritidsbutiker.
Mm.
Olika impregneringar.
Välsorterade sport, det låter som han hemliga Arne. Finns i alla välsorterade monsterbutiker. Ja. Men ni finns inte, era kläder finns inte på några monsterbutiker.
Nej.
Grymt. Tusen tack för tipsen.
Tack.
Hi Stephanie, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine, thank you.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me here.
And you're from Denmark.
Yeah.
So, and we'll do this in English because I actually don't understand Danish so much. How's your Swedish?
Not really good. No. I understand some words or most words, but yeah, I'm not good at it either.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, but English is hopefully fine for the listeners. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we have some Danish people listening.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah?
I really hope so.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
So this podcast is all about me interviewing different hunters mm-hmm. about their passion to hunting. Mm-hmm. I'm a hunter myself, and I've been asking me the question for a couple of years, why I hunt. And I've spoken to a lot of persons about that, why they hunt. Mm-hmm. So that's the main reason with this podcast, but also to gain knowledge. Everybody has different perspective to their hunting passion. Mm-hmm. So I think it's interesting to talk to a lot of people with different passions and yeah. different perspectives. Mm-hmm. So if we start with you, you're a bow hunter.
Yeah.
Do you just hunt by bow or no. rifle also?
No, I hunt with everything I can, actually. Yeah. I hunt with bow, rifle, shotgun. I like all kind of hunting, but bow hunting is my big passion. And goose hunting is my work, yeah. I would say.
So we will mm-hmm. talk a lot about bow hunting because mm-hmm. we don't have any bow hunters in
no.
Sweden.
No.
We have some bow hunters, but they don't hunt in Sweden because no. that's not allowed.
No, unfortunately.
But I think we should start with your background, maybe.
Yeah.
So how did it start for you? How did your passion for hunting begin?
I think it started when I was really, really young, actually. I was an outdoor girl. I yeah. always played outside, and my father did as well. So I was just raised like just go out and play and come home when it's dark.
Yeah.
I loved nature as a little girl. Yeah. I was outside all the time in every kind of weather. Yeah. My parents couldn't keep me inside. And I was just walking around. I played with my friends, but a lot of the times I just played alone. I yeah. loved being outside and playing. I was a Indian Pocahontas or something and yeah. had to find my own meat and sneak up on animals. And so I think when my father, I don't remember when, but he started taking me out fishing and hunting, and it was quite early.
But he was a hunter when you were born.
Yeah, he's been a hunter all his life. Yeah. So he took me there. I can't remember. It was so early that I can't remember when.
Okay, I understand.
But he took me there. And I think when you're outdoor girl or a boy, and you spend so much time in nature, and you just, you know, look at nature, you're in there, you see all the animals, how they react, and what, you know, you watch all the details in nature.
Yeah.
To hunt is just a normal part of it.
Yeah.
You know, so it wasn't really something I had to be interested in. And, you know, it just came naturally because that's what you see in nature all the time. Some animals eat each other, yeah. Chase each other. Like, it's just, I think it's a totally natural way of us to be in nature. It's yeah. a natural part of nature that we hunt to eat meat.
Yeah.
So I didn't shoot animals, but I was there and we picked them up together and fished a lot as well. So
do you remember when you started to hunt yourself?
I can't remember when it was. It's actually not. I got a hunting license maybe it's 15 years ago. Yeah. I don't quite remember, actually.
Okay. Did you start with bow hunting directly or rifle hunting?
Bow hunting was my first priority, yeah.
Yeah. So your father is a bow hunter as well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's been a bow hunter for many years as well. So I think it was just natural for me to go that way.
Yeah.
Rifle hunting wasn't really, I love all hunting. I love yeah. rifle hunting as well, but I wanted to become a bow hunter because I've been hunting with my dad and yeah. I know what it was. So.
I ask all my guests why they hunt. Mm-hmm. And often I get different reactions on that one. Mm-hmm. Some people do it for the meat and some for the experience mm-hmm. or the excitement mm-hmm. and so on. How is it for you? Why do you hunt?
You know, I hunt because I feel like, first of all, I love it. And most the biggest reason why I hunt is because you get to have so many hours in nature.
Yeah.
And I feel like hunting is just a natural part of being in nature. And when I hunt and I kill an animal, I actually don't enjoy killing an animal, but I enjoy the process. Like, if you want to eat meat, you work for it. it's a part of eating meat. You have to kill an animal.
Yeah.
And that's the part you enjoy the least, I would say. But after that, you know, you have experienced this and you've maybe experienced it with your son or your father. And you know the feeling that I worked for this animal. This animal had a good life before I took its life in nature where it belonged. It didn't hear me. It didn't see me. It just died quickly out of blood loss, maybe if it was an arrow. And after that, you know, you eat the meat. You enjoy it a lot more than if you came up, you went up to the grocery store. Yeah. Tastes a lot better.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I showed this animal the respect that it deserved. And I think the animals deserve that respect. When you buy meat from the grocery store, you don't even know what color the cow had or the chicken, how they live their life. You don't know anything about them. You don't care about them.
Yeah.
It's just meat. It's not even an animal. It's not alive for you.
Yeah.
It's just meat. And that's what I love about hunting. I eat meat from the grocery store as well. But I feel like when I'm hunting, I feel like it's you know you're doing the right thing. It feels so right. And I love that part of it, of hunting. I feel like I do what I'm supposed to do. This is the right way to eat meat. It's okay if you don't want to eat meat or you don't want to take a life. But if you have to, this is the perfect way to do it.
Yeah.
The best way to do it.
Yeah.
Show nature respect and the animal. It's no better way.
No. When you were a kid, you said you were outdoors almost all the time.
Yeah.
Is it the same now? Are you out in the woods a lot without a rifle or a bow?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah,
I love being outside still. I really enjoy. I think actually I wouldn't really be the same person if I weren't in nature that much.
No.
I love it. I think I'm addicted to it actually.
Yeah.
And I think I've been that all my life. That's where I relax.
Yeah.
You know, meditate and like when you have to charge a battery, that's where you charge your batteries in nature.
Yeah.
You know. So I think I can't live without it.
It's so cool when you are stressed and you have a lot of things to do and so on, and then you go out in the forest. Maybe you hunt or maybe you're just out with your family or friends.
Mm-hmm.
And the energy that you get from being outdoors is amazing.
Yeah, one feeling I have also when I walk in nature, and I've had that all my life, is like, you feel like when you walk into nature, especially when you're alone, you feel like you walk into a different world. And this world is so pure and so clean and so simple.
Yeah.
There's no, you know, you don't have to look in a certain way. You don't have to, there's no social media, no money involved, no how do I look? How do people look at me? How much money do I have? I mean, how do my house look? There's none of that superficial thing.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing, no material things out there. It's just so simple and so clean.
Yeah.
That's a good way to get a break of all this we live in today.
Yeah.
And that's why I love it so much.
What would you say that you feel when you're out hunting? Is it possible to put words on it?
Yeah, it's difficult to describe feelings, especially when it's not in your own language.
Yeah.
So I'll try to do it as good as I can. But when I'm hunting, I think I said a little bit about it earlier. Like when you walk into nature, you feel like you walk into this separate world.
Yeah.
And this you know, as a child, I heard, you know, thunder and lightning and you hear storm and the weather, the power and the strength in nature. And you get a little bit scared because you know how much power and strength there is there. And so you have a feeling of a little bit fear, but also just respect, a lot of respect. So I always feel like I step into a different world when I'm hunting. And I'm so grateful that I can kind of walk into this place where I don't feel we're so small.
Yeah.
It's not our world.
No.
Like I said before, it was there before we came. It will be there after we're gone. You know, nature just takes care of itself.
Yeah.
It's so clever. We get all our inspiration out there. And it's so beautiful, all the details there. You can sit for 4 hours and watch a tree. And then the sun hits the tree in a different way. And you just sit there and it's, ah. And the feelings you get out there are just incredible.
Yeah.
I've never had feelings like that before. I've tried it, you know, when you give birth to your child. That's also a crazy experience, you know. That's the biggest, you know, you can't feel anything bigger than that. And you can't tell what you feel because it's so huge. So many feelings of love you've never known you had or could experience.
Yeah.
That's how it is when you get your child. But in nature, it's not the same, of course, but it's similar feelings. You get feelings you just can't describe. Where did it come from? I can't describe what happens in me, but I think it's love, total love.
Yeah.
It's incredible, and I don't feel that anywhere else. I can't experience that feeling anywhere else, other than maybe with my kids. But that's a little different feeling.
Yeah. You said that it would be hard to explain in English instead of Danish. I think you did it perfectly.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
I'm happy. Yeah, it's difficult talking about feelings when it's not in your own language, I think.
Yeah.
But
So it would be really cool to talk about bow hunting. I've been following you for a couple of years now on Instagram.
Uh-huh.
And that's how I found you.
Mm-hmm.
Because and your Instagram account is just, it's amazing, I think.
Yeah,
you hunt with your boys, your kids, with your dad. You travel a lot. It's such an experience to just take part of your hunting life.
Mm-hmm.
So I can recommend everyone who listens to this to follow you on Instagram. You're called Hunting Steph.
Yeah.
I actually know very little about bow hunting.
Mm-hmm.
How do you take a license?
You have to take a course. Like you can actually start as a bow hunter. You don't have to be a rifle hunter or shoot with a shotgun before.
Yeah.
You take a course, and it's not that difficult. But you have to. I think it's 20 questions. It's a long time ago I took it, so I'm not totally updated with this. But you take a course, one day of course, and then you learn a lot of things about bow hunting. You have a whole day, and people teaching you how to shoot and shoot your bow in, and that day you get a stamp, okay, you've been here. And then you can take a test about bow hunting and, you know, all the rules and ethical rules as well. And if you you get that, I think you are allowed to have one or two fails. And then if that's okay, you go out and shoot 6 targets.
Yeah.
And then, of course, one is okay not to hit, but all the others have to be hit. And then you have to, every 5th year, go up again and shoot at those same 6 targets. And if you can shoot, then you can keep your license. But you have to do that.
Is it the same with rifle hunters in Denmark that you have to do it again?
No. Okay. It should be.
Yeah, that should would be quite good, actually, I think.
That's good because you come up and you know people, they practice all the time because they want their license again.
Yeah.
And if they don't want it, then okay, you can't shoot. You're not allowed to shoot with it anymore.
Yeah.
And it should be the same for everybody,
actually. So what would you say is the biggest different hunting with bow if you compare it to a rifle?
Oh, there's a huge difference, I think. You can, as a rifle hunter, of course, come really close to an animal. And that can be really exciting as well. But for a bow hunter, you have to get in there. You have to get close every time. And
what's the maximum distance to a roe deer?
There's not really rules there. There's ethical rule, like you say, 20 meters is maximum.
Yeah. Okay.
Not because you have to do that. You can shoot them on 100 meters if you want to.
Yeah.
But you say in Denmark, like the arrow will reach the animal before it reached the animal. It will hear the sound of your bow and the arrow, so it will react to your arrow. And it will duck.
Yeah.
And that's why you say get as close as possible. Shoot it when it is not looking, when it's not afraid. It's just eating or it doesn't know you're there at all.
Yeah.
Shoot it there because then it won't react.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of technique in it, actually.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about bow hunting, I think, is that you get them so close.
Yeah.
You get those close experience, close encounters every time. I have had bugs on 3 meters. I mean,
you've had a buck on your
back. In my blind. Yeah.
We have to talk about that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that directly. I've just seen a movie where you're covered in a camouflage costume and so on. And you have, is it a buck or?
It's a buck. It's a little buck, yeah.
And it came really close. You can't actually see the buck in the picture, but you can see your reaction.
You can see it.
You can actually see it.
I point an arrow down. You can see it. It's looking up at me, actually. And you see the spikes.
Because it was nibbling on your clothes.
Yeah, it was there for half an hour or something around me. It was behind me. I sat in a blind and this little buck came in.
Yeah.
And it's actually a funny story because we'll get to that. I think we have a tame roe deer.
Yeah.
A female. And I've been looking at her and she walked out with me hunting as well. She was actually annoying because she spooked up all the animals away. But she was playing with this particularly buck.
Yeah.
And this buck, I've saw him with our Bambi many times.
Yeah.
And so he came in and I could have shot him, but I had like this feeling of, nah, I don't want to. I have meat and I'll just look at him.
Yeah.
Just watch him. And I'm glad I didn't shoot him because he walked out. He was at 18 meters and he walked behind me and I thought he was gone. And all of a sudden I hear something behind me.
Yeah.
And he was scratching on my microphone on my camera.
Yeah.
And then he was scratching on my chair behind me. And I didn't move at all. And I thought, this is so cool. This is so cool. But nobody can see him. I had the camera on.
Yeah.
So I thought, typical. You never get this on film. And I just sat still. But I thought people can hear him.
Yeah.
They can hear because he was breathing and he was scratching and he was eating, you can hear everything.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it was so cool. Then he just walks around me on my left side and he walks in front of me and looks up. And I could have taken him by the horns many times and just sit there and looked. And I saw ticks and everything in his head. And it was so cool. And then I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden he just smelled
me. But he didn't smell you?
No.
No.
But I think, you know, he was a stupid buck, maybe. But I think
a really young buck.
But maybe I think I have a feeling that maybe he was walking around with our Bambi and she smelled of humans.
Yeah, that's
so
possible.
Maybe he was like, oh, that smell, I know that from somewhere. He wasn't that spooked or scared by it.
But the film, your reaction to the film is fantastic. You're shaking and it's just so intense.
Yeah, really. I was shaking so much. And that's the cool thing about being a hunter. And that's also why it's not about the kill at all. Because this experience was one of the coolest ones I've ever had.
Yeah.
I don't have to kill an animal to get that. And that's why I like being a bow hunter. Because you have to get this close every time.
Yeah.
So you get those really, really cool experiences like this.
When you hunt with a rifle, do you also get closer to the animals you think than you actually have to because you're used to it as a bow hunter?
Yeah, I would do that and I would stalk them more.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't shoot that much with a rifle, but I like shooting with a rifle, actually. I like it. And I like it's a little bit the same with the bow. You have to be totally calm.
Yeah.
And the trigger has to go up without you knowing it.
Yeah.
And all those things, your heartbeat, you have to be calm, totally calm. It's the same with the rifle. It's actually not that easy shooting with the rifle either.
No, it's not.
So it's not like it's easy shooting animals with the rifle. It's not.
What animals are you allowed to hunt with a bow?
You can hunt everything with a bow.
You can? Okay.
Yeah.
How is the reaction of the animal when you shoot it with a bow?
First of all, you don't take chances on animals when you're buck hunting as much as nobody should take chances on animals, but you have to have them this close because you want a clean kill.
Yeah.
And of course, if you're a good hunter with respect for yourself, you want to practice and know that you're a good shot.
Yeah.
And when you do that, you don't take chances with an animal. So that's why I shoot them maximum, as I said before, 20 meters. So, and you know your bow, you know your shot, and you know how your arrow will react.
Yeah.
And that's how you will shoot the animal.
Yeah.
And I've shot animals on 7 meters and 20 meters or 15 meters. And you know, by experience, and also because you have to know your animal,
yeah,
how they will react. And also if they're not scared or anything, they won't react as much. But when you shoot an animal, and that's what I love about bow hunting also, is that you can sometimes shoot them and they won't even know what hit them.
No.
Because it's a clean cut. The arrow just goes right through them, like when you cut yourself with a knife,
yeah,
or really, really sharp knife.
Yeah.
And sometimes they won't know what hit them. Was it a buck that just hit me?
Yeah.
And often you see them just run a little bit and then they stand there and sometimes they eat again. Animals around them don't know what hit them either. They're not spooked. They know nothing. No loud noises, nothing. And then all of a sudden he just gets tired and fall over and die. I think that's a pretty good death.
Yeah.
You know, they never saw anything. They never heard anything. It was just like a poof.
Yeah.
And then they die.
Where do you aim on a deer? Is it the same with rifle and bow? Or?
No, you go for the heart or the lungs.
So lower.
Yeah, and you also have to think about the bones.
Yeah.
Bone structure. And that, I think, again, that's why bow hunters are often good hunters, because you have to know your animal. Yeah. You have to know, you know, your arrow and your boundaries. And with a buck, you can easily shoot through them with a heavy arrow, yeah, easily, down to 40 pounds or whatever, you can, yeah, shoot them. But when you go up to the bigger animals, like fallow deers and red stag,
yeah,
you have to know where to aim.
Yeah.
You go for the more, the areas where no bones are,
yeah,
the long areas.
And how often do you practice with your bow?
You don't have to practice that often, actually. You shoot your bow in, so it's perfectly shot, like you do with your rifle.
Yeah.
And if you think it's fun, I mean, a lot of bow hunters shoot a lot because they, yeah, it's like a sport. They think it's fun to shoot.
Yeah.
But I don't have that much time to shoot.
No.
So before I go to a hunt the day before, I shoot it in. And I know, okay, I'm certain this arrow will... shoot where I wanted, yeah, to shoot.
And you, do you ever hunt with a bow on moving animals?
No. I don't do that much.
But are you allowed to do it?
Yeah, it depends on the situation, actually, but and how close it is.
Yeah.
Because if it's 9 meters, yeah, and it's walking a little bit, you can easily shoot.
Yeah.
So it's, I would say it depends on the situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's cool because I've had the last one, me and my son actually shot. And I think it was in, before that, it was, we had a buck on 9 meters.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was looking at us and it was just a tree between us.
Yeah.
And we had him so close and I could draw to him. No, I couldn't draw to him because he was looking straight towards us all the time. I had his head towards us. So I couldn't draw anything. I was just looking at him and
draw. You mean with the
you
bow.
Draw your bow?
Okay,
yeah.
Because
that's the difficult part with bow hunting, yeah, is that when you get you have to get the animal that close.
Yeah.
And when they're that close, you have to do one more thing.
Yeah.
And that's where you can be caught.
Yeah. Okay.
Because you have to draw your bow and make a big move.
And when you have done that, mm-hmm, is it really hard to hold it?
No.
Oh, okay.
You get your bow out to a let off.
Yeah.
It's hard to pull it.
Yeah.
But then you get into a let off.
Yeah.
And so you can stand there like for that. Minutes.
Okay.
Minutes. I mean, yeah. Some can have it for 5 minutes.
And when
minutes.
You release the arrow, you have something in your hand.
Yeah, a releaser.
A releaser. And
it's like a trigger.
Okay, you press something and then it releases. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You can also have them where you just pull your arm back and then it releases. But most of them, you have a little trigger and you just squeeze the trigger like a rifle and just releases the arrow.
Okay.
Välkommen till Scandinavian Sake, du talar med Evelina.
Hej Evelina, det var Daniel da Silva här.
Men hej!
Hej! Du, vet du vad? Vi ska spela in lite grann här, tänkte jag, och prata om Scandinavian Safe. För jag personligen är superglad att ni vill gå in och ha samarbete med podden Jägaren. Dels så har du faktiskt ett erbjudande till lyssnarna, men jag tänkte att vi ska börja med att prata lite grann om att ni är ett familjeföretag, eller hur?
Ja, men exakt. Vi är ju ett familjeföretag som drivs av mig och mina tre syskon. Och vi har tagit över Scandinavian Safe från vår pappa som startade bolaget. Och i år firar vi faktiskt 20 år.
Så du är liksom uppväxt med vapenskåp och säkerhetsskåp runt omkring dig?
Exakt. Och det vi har gjort nu sen vi tog över, det är att vi har försökt att förnya utseendena på skåpen och få skåpen att passa in mer som en inredningsdetalj i hemmet eller på kontoret. Så nu försöker vi liksom pimpa till skåpen lite.
Jag har ju själv alltid haft ett vapenskåp, ett Scandinavian Safe-skåp faktiskt, men ganska traditionellt i den här liksom vita färgen. Och det har jag haft lite gömt in i en garderob. Men nu har jag faktiskt köpt ett nytt skåp som är SP88 Raw Steel, som är supersnyggt tycker jag. Och det kommer vara liksom highlighten på ett nytt kontor som jag håller på att inreda. Ett hemmakontor helt enkelt, där jag ska jobba. Och då kommer det verkligen vara, ja men det kommer sticka ut och det kommer stå framme och jag tror att det kommer bli skitfint.
Ja, det är så roligt att höra, för det är precis vad jag tänker att många vill och gör, att man liksom vill visa upp skåpet. Så det där är vi superspända på att se bild på, det måste jag säga.
Och ni gör ju mycket projekt kring utseenden på skåpen. Jag vet att ni har gjort någonting tillsammans med Rosa Bandet och Mustaschkampen, va?
Det har vi gjort. Vi har gjort en välgörenhetskampanj tillsammans med Tradera då, där vi har auktionerat ut unika skåp. Och förra året så var det Carolina Gynning som designade skåp tillsammans för Bröstcancerförbundet. Och sen så var det Marco och Marcolio som designade skåp till förmån för Prostatacancerförbundet. Och där går alla pengar oavkort, så skänks de till de här cancerförbunden.
Och sen vet jag att ni även har en liten grej ni vill berätta för lyssnarna i podden, eller hur?
Ja, det har vi. Vi designar inte bara skåp, utan man kan ju också då få, vi har ju tagit fram en massa tillbehör. Och där tänker jag att dina lyssnare ska få 20% rabatt på våra tillbehör. Så in på scandinaviansafe.se, välj vad ni vill ha och sen i varukorgen så lägger ni in då rabattkoden Jägaren. Och det här erbjudandet kommer gälla ända till sista augusti 2021.
Ja, det är fantastiskt. Så använd rabattkoden Jägaren på scandinaviansafe.se. Tusen tack för att jag fick prata med dig, Evelina.
Tack själv. Tack snälla.
Ha det bra nu. Hej då. You hunt a lot with your boys.
Yeah.
How old are they?
They're 12 and 10.
Yeah. And when how old were they when you started to bring them hunting?
2 years old.
2 years old.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, started there.
And how is that for you as a mother to share those experiences with your kids?
I love it so much. I love it so much. It's been hard actually, because you it's not easy having them out hunting, and also because I wanted to teach my kid to be in nature like I was. So there's no iPad, no phone, anything.
No.
So they just have to be in it. And of course you get that a lot when I'm bored, mom. Yeah. And a lot of the times they spook the animals away. But you just have to see like a progress.
Yeah.
You don't take them out on an important hunt when you really have to shoot something. But they just loved it. And I think when you just put your kids in nature, the natural way, they get those feelings. They have them already.
Yeah.
What keeps them away from it sometimes is what we put into their heads.
Yeah.
You know, for kids, it's totally normal to be in nature, to get inspired by nature like we do. Everything we created is inspired by nature.
Yeah.
So for kids, it's just a normal thing. You
are
really have
are
to
both
be strict.
Of them as interested in hunting?
The oldest one is the most interested.
Yeah. Is he the one who has some special connection with roe deers?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you have this roe deer that you've had in your garden since it was a small fawn.
Yeah, I was hunting,
yeah.
Bow hunting, and I sat a place and I did not know that this little roe deer was laying here.
Yeah.
And I could feel that the mother was trying to come into the lamb, but it couldn't come in because I was sitting there.
Yeah.
And I had my back laying there, so it probably smelled a lot of human.
Yeah.
And I could feel her. She wanted to come in. I thought it was a bug because I didn't want to look behind, but I know it was her.
Yeah.
She wanted to come in. And I sat there for hours.
Yeah.
And probably it smelled of human after that. And I went out there two times more, and it was still laying there.
Okay, so the mother...
So I know it would have died. So I took it home to my kids, and we gave her milk and all that.
Yeah.
And it was actually... It wasn't that bad as I thought. I thought I would have to go up every hour and feed her and during the night, but it wasn't bad. And she just grew up, and we pretty fast let her go out in nature because we didn't want to have her like locked in. And rodeos can't do that.
No.
They get totally crazy if you lock them in.
Yeah.
So my parents live in a forest. So it was like she just went out there and came home and got milk when she wanted it.
Uh-huh.
And today she lives wildly with other rodeos, and my kids, they can call her in and they walk out there and play with her for hours in the forest.
That's amazing.
That's so cool. And she's so wild now that she won't accept us grown-ups.
No.
So she's afraid of humans, which is good.
Yeah.
So but
she's
my
afraid
kids,
of you.
Yeah. She can accept me if my boys are there.
Yeah.
But she won't accept my dad or anything.
Do you recognize her?
Yeah, because she has a bracelet. My mom nicked a bracelet for her. And it's so loose that if she's stuck in something, she'll just fall.
Yeah, okay.
I think we switched it 5 times or something.
Yeah.
But she'll call when they come, when they call for her.
And how do they call?
My youngest kid, he said like a rodeo. He likes a beep, beep. I can't say the word, but the sound. But he does it. And they'll still come. And they'll just yell out, Bambi, Bambi. And she'll
so
come.
Her name is Bambi.
Bambi, yeah. Yeah, so cool.
Family for you seem very important.
Yeah.
You hunt and you work with your dad a lot, together with your kids.
Yeah.
Is hunting what really brings you together?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so. Because, you know, we hunt a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. And sometimes when we're not hunting, we're fishing. And my mother, she gets crazy sometimes. Yeah. It's like, do you ever do anything else but just hunting? And if we can't hunt, then what can we do then? Let's go outside and play in nature.
Yeah.
So I think hunting is what, and nature is what.
But your mother doesn't hunt at all.
No, she does not at all. No.
No.
I think she had enough of it just by us.
Yeah.
So, but she has nothing against it. She eats the meat, and she has been hunting with my dad several times.
Yeah.
And she likes nature, but she's, it's just not her.
And what about your father? How much do you hunt together now?
We hunt, you know, we work together, and we hunt together a lot. My father is my inspiration when it comes to hunting. He taught me anything I know about hunting, and I think he's a really good hunter. I mean, he has this... Sometimes to become a really good hunter, you have to have this feeling of what you're doing is right.
Yeah.
It's a special feeling. Also, if you have to change something or how to sneak up on an animal or to place the arrow right or the rifle shot or whatever. He's just a real skilled hunter, and he's really good. I really look up to him, and he taught me... Not only to become a good hunter, but he also taught me the love for animals and the respect for nature. Also my mom, both of them. But it's definitely a special feeling to hunt with your dad and then share it with your kids. It's a real special feeling, and I love it.
In what ways do you get inspired by your dad, would you say?
The cool thing about him is today that I see in him a lot is that he can sit and hunt, and he comes home and tell me, yeah, I had an animal, and yeah, I could have shot it, but you know, I didn't want to. I just didn't want to kill it. I just looked at it, and yeah, I just thought it was so pretty, and just the feeling that I could have killed it is enough for me.
Yeah,
I don't need to kill. And I really have respect for that.
Do you feel that way also sometimes?
Yeah, I really do. I was after a fallow buck, and I really wanted to shoot it. And I had to go up early in the morning,
And I woke up and my kids were laying there sleeping. And I thought about the fellow. I knew it because I had it in my head. I knew exactly how it looked because I had it on trail cams and I've seen it many times, but I couldn't shoot it. And I got a special feeling in my body. I had a feeling like, no, I can't kill it today. Not today. I don't want to kill it today.
No.
Then I laid down to sleep again. I didn't want to kill it.
I thought you would say that I killed it anyway.
No.
That would be such a bad ending on that story.
No, I didn't. I actually really had that feeling, though. I can't kill it today. I don't want to. You know, you had that mission in your head, like, no, I don't want to kill it.
No.
I don't want to kill it. You get, especially when it's your own hunting area and you watch the animals and you get them close, also when it's not hunting season, then you get a special feeling. You can easily kill them, but sometimes you just, I don't want to kill.
No.
And that's cool. It shows a little bit what it's about to be a hunter.
Yeah.
You can kill when you have to and you have to get meat, but sometimes you just watch them.
In Sweden, just a couple of days ago, it passed a new law. And from next year, it will be allowed with hunting springbuck. And today that's allowed in the eastern part of Sweden because of Chernobyl.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a big discussion right now in Sweden. And I know in Denmark, you have already now those...
On Sunday, 16th of May.
So how do you... to preserve the population and or to even make the population of roe deer better from year to year, how do you think to make the best of it?
I think actually what we have in Denmark should be for us to shoot away the smaller bucks or the bucks we don't want to pass on the genes.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's like that, because you want to shoot a big trophy.
Yeah.
And also, because I'm a bow hunter, I've talked about this many times, I think we bow hunters should be allowed to have a period before the rifle hunter comes in, like they do in America, where we can go out by ourselves in nature and we won't shoot as many animals. And bow hunters will shoot what comes in, and often it's smaller bucks.
Yeah.
But the rifle hunters should be the ones that shoot away what needs to be shoot away.
Yep.
And a lot of hunters do that. A lot of the hunters do that. And I think we have where I live, we have a lot of roe deers, really, really many roe deers. They just don't get that big. That can be because of the food they eat there, but it can also be about we're shooting away the wrong ones.
Yep.
It's a difficult subject because I think in Poland they do it really good.
Yeah.
Really, really good.
Yeah. But in Poland it's different also. A lot of countries in the eastern part of Europe, I think the hunting grounds are very, very big as well.
Yeah.
I think they have to have grounds over 10,000 hectares to be able to hunt there. And then you have such good knowledge about the population.
Yeah, they really are good at it. They are. I have a friend there and I've been hunting there and you can just feel they know so much about the animals and what they have of animals in their area. And it's huge areas.
Yeah.
So they are good at it. And I think, but again, you can't just say Poland does it the right way, so Denmark is not doing it the right way, because it's a totally different area and animals and, again, what they eat and what they live in, because Denmark is a really small country.
Yeah.
And we are a lot of hunters in a small area. So, yeah, it's difficult. I think you have to set the laws after what country you live in.
Yeah.
And we must do something right in Denmark because we have a lot of animals. In some areas, there are huge animals.
If you compare Denmark to Sweden, because I know that you have been hunting a lot in Sweden as well.
Yeah.
What animals do we have in Sweden that you don't have in Denmark?
Well, you have wild boars.
Yeah.
We don't have them in Denmark, unfortunately, anymore.
Do you have moose?
No, we don't have moose either. We have, you know, roe deers, fallow stags, red stags. That's the bigger deers, but that's all we have. And sika also.
You have sika deer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but we don't have moose at all. And I think it's a really, really beautiful animal. Not a lot of people does.
The moose is extraordinary. It's like the king of the forest. Yeah, it's amazing.
I would love to shoot a moose with my bow.
Could you do that anywhere in the world?
Yeah, in Canada. You can do it in Canada. Yeah, okay.
I've seen a movie where you have hunted moose.
Yeah. With a rifle.
Yeah. How was that? Then I saw you were shaking as much as when you were in the close encounter with the reindeer.
I always shake. Yeah. I always get the fever.
Yeah.
I like that actually.
Yeah.
That's a part of it. And I think it's important that you get the fever because the fever is about the excitement, but it's also about you just took a life.
Yeah, exactly.
And you just want it to be a good kill.
Yeah.
So I think it's important if you don't care after a shot, then something is wrong. You should maybe not hunt anymore.
I know that a lot of people that I've talked to that are a little bit older and have a lot of experience, they really miss that. They miss the excitement just after a shot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm as you. I get totally a nerve wreck just after the shot, not before.
Not before.
I'm totally calm.
Yeah.
But I think that's quite normal. I think it's good because that means that you care.
Yeah, and if you have it before, you maybe shouldn't shoot. But if you have a little more experience, it will come after. Because the cool thing is when you're hunting, especially with bow, where you have those close encounters with animals, I think what I do, I don't know if everybody experienced that, but my father said also he thinks it's cool to watch me because I become this predator.
Yeah.
And when you see an animal and you know, okay, now it's now, then something gets switched on.
Yeah.
And I become this totally predator and I just, you don't think a thought.
No.
That's the best thing, I think, not to think anything. You just let your instinct take over. And everything you do is just by, you have your total focus on this animal.
Yeah.
And you can either sneak up on it or just sit close and just watch it and just wait for the right moment.
But I mean, nowadays we don't have to hunt to.
No. But that's sad, right? Because we don't have to, because it's in us.
Yeah.
It's in us to hunt. And you don't have to hunt animals all the time. You can also hunt mushrooms or whatever. It's so deep in us that we have to find food every day so we can survive. Mm. It's a part of our instinct because we have to have food. I think it's to just place food so easily for people so you don't have to work for it anymore. It's not good for us. It's really not. We get fat and lazy and doesn't appreciate nature or animals. And then we start talking about things like, oh, you shouldn't kill animals. It's such a pity. But it's a part of nature. And we're walking towards a place where we shouldn't be. And I mean, people, it's good for us to go back to nature and to pick up our food there, work for it every day. But today it's all about money, money and get an easy life. And that's not where we're from. It's not good for us.
No.
And that's why we as hunter, again, we go out in nature and then you feel less. Okay.
Yeah. I know that you have been in Africa hunting as well. And then you were in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell us about when you were hunting wildebeest?
Yeah, that was really cool. I mean, it was from a little small house, actually, we shot it.
Yeah.
But you would think, because me and Jonas both thought, oh, that's easy.
Yeah.
No, it's you just sit in there and you come and you shoot them.
Yeah.
And we didn't really want that kind of hunting. We would want to stalk the animals in the mountains because we thought, that's real hunt. This is nothing. But we sat in a little house and you could open the window a little bit and then shoot out of the window. That's not easy with a bow either. But we sat there, I think we sat there for 6 hours one of the days. And it was 60 degrees in there.
Yeah.
And we sat, me and two other, Jonas wasn't there when I shot it, but me and Dias and the guys sat in there. And when you go in there, you're not allowed to pee or anything outside. Mm-hmm. You can't walk outside. So you sit there and you sit for hours and hours. And the heat was a struggle.
Yeah.
So that was a part of the hunt. You had to,
oh, I can't handle this anymore. It's so hot, so yeah. hot. And then when animals come in, you have to, you know, you have to perform, yeah. but you're totally weak because you've been sweating for hours and hours. And we sat there the day after day and after day, and the animals just didn't want to come in.
No.
Because even though we were in a house, they knew we were there.
Yeah.
Because they were so, so skittish because they're used to predators.
Yeah.
So they alert all the time and they could smell us.
Yeah.
And the wind was bad and the wind kept on switching. So we saw them out there. We could see them, but they just didn't want to come in.
Yeah.
But the last day, and that's how it always is, was yeah. happening. The last day, the last minute, the guide actually said, should we just give up? And I was like, I said, no, no. I put my mind into this and I'll stay here until the morning. I don't care. We'll stay here for 24 hours. And he was like, okay, well, we'll do that. And then he came in, of course. A flock came in. My luck switched because hunting is about luck a lot. You know that. So the wind switched and then a flock came in. And the female was the big male was behind. And I had one chance to kill him. And he said, just aim for the heart. You know, go up the leg and you have this spot. I mean, it's really small spot. You have to hit in the heart. And they're used to predators.
Yeah.
So they can handle a lot before they die. You yeah. have to hit them the right spot. Luckily, I hit them the right spot. And he was hit in the heart. And he ran 80 meters.
Yeah.
Dead. So perfect. That was so cool. And a thing that was so cool about the hunt was that I was able to shoot the point he said. Point your arrow has to go in that little spot. And it came into that spot. And I did everything perfectly. And I was so tired and it was so hard. Sat there for 6 hours or something in total heat.
Yeah.
And almost gave up, but didn't want to give up.
No.
And I was so happy I didn't give up. So yeah. that was what was cool by the hunt.
Yeah.
That you were able to kill such a big animal that was so skittish and so alert, and he died so quickly.
Yeah.
Perfect shot.
So let's talk about Colorado. I know you've been hunting there mule deer and elk.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, and smaller animals as well. Yeah.
How was it?
That was so cool. That was a really, really cool experience. One of the best ones I ever had, actually. Because again, it was not about the kill, but it was more about the nature experience.
Yeah.
And we came to Colorado. We had a guide with us, Marcel, and we rode on horse up into the mountains.
Oh, cool.
And stayed there for 9 days. I think it was 9 days. And the feeling up there in the mountains is totally, I mean, it's totally different. It's a special kind of feeling. First of all, you're so high up and it's funny, you can't eat anything. I couldn't eat any food up there. I was, I had coffee with me and everything, cared so much. That poor guide, he had to carry anything up there. And when we came up there, I couldn't eat anything and I couldn't drink coffee. I could nothing. Water with some vitamins in.
Why? Because you were exhausted or?
No, because it's a different, the air pressure up there is different.
Uh-huh.
But you're so high on the nature there, so you have lots of energy.
Yeah, okay.
It's a weird feeling. And our guide kept on pressing food in us, but me and I had my brother-in-law
that
with me.
That would not be a problem for me. I can eat.
No, but I can also eat a lot.
It doesn't matter how the air pressure is.
I mean, I love food.
Yeah.
I love food and I eat a lot of it. But up there, and as I thought I would eat a lot, I couldn't eat anything. Yeah. And my brother-in-law had the same feeling.
Yeah.
And they said that was totally normal.
Yeah.
So that was a weird experience, but you had so much energy up there because I think the mountains got you a little high.
Oh, okay.
And it was such a cool experience. And the guide, I think he pressured me a little bit because maybe I knew I could handle it or he thought I maybe didn't. I don't know.
Yeah.
But he told me up there that a lot of the hunters he had up there with him, and that was rifle hunters as well, they looked at the mountains and they got scared. Like they, it was okay. Like, oh, do I have to walk through all of this up and down? And then you shoot an elk down the mountain and you know, I have to carry it up.
Yep.
because the horse won't come there. You have to carry it on your back.
But then you were there shooting with a rifle.
No, with a bow.
With a bow. Okay. Yeah.
And so he said, he just said to me, just so you know, this can be hard for you, you know, mentally. But you have to just say stop when you can't handle it anymore. Yep. And I thought, I'm not going to say stop. But my brother-in-law, he couldn't handle it. It was actually his body. Mm. He was, I think he was coughing up blood one day. And the guy said, you have to just relax now because his lungs couldn't handle the air pressure. So he stayed in the camp up on the mountain for, many days. And we went hunting, me and the guide alone.
So his experience of Colorado is not as good as yours?
No, but he enjoyed the time a lot because he was around. You know, but when we really wanted, you know, we hunted all the time.
Yeah.
But anyway, we had to hunt, and my guide was from New Zealand, so he just ran over the mountains like it was nothing. And I came after him with my bow in my hand, and I was I knew I would never say stop. Mm. I would continue showing what I could, and he told me about the hunters that gave up when they saw the elk because they knew that to carry it up. And I said to myself, no matter what, I'm not going to say that.
No
matter what. So we ran the hunt when I shot the elk, because I did shoot one, was 7 hours up and down the hills or the mountains.
Yeah.
And you can't describe it. It's just so hard.
Yeah.
And the feeling of you look up at a big mountain and you say, yeah, you just have to go all the way up there. I spotted some up there. And every step is hard.
Yeah.
And then you come all the way up there, and then they run down the hill.
Yeah.
And so you go down the hill, and then you watch them over the other side, and they go up. And then you go up again. And that's the feeling there. That was terrible. Yeah. But it was still cool.
Yeah.
I had that adrenaline rush in me all the time. And also the feeling that I just knew I don't want to give up. Mm. But eventually, actually, I did a little bit give up. Because we've been hunting these elk for hours and hours and hours. And I saw them jump over some water, a little lake there, and they just ran up the mountain. And they knew we were there.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, you can continue, but I knew it was going to get dark.
Yeah.
And there were some bears in the area. And we only had my bow, nothing else.
Yeah.
And I said to the guy, you know, I don't want to hunt these anymore. I don't believe in it.
No.
You know, they see us and they just went up and down. Maybe he could have done it alone. I don't know, but I couldn't.
No.
So I said, let's just not hunt them anymore. And he said, okay, let's go back. And then we went back in bear country and we went into a bear area. And that was really cool, actually. And I thought it was so cool. The guy says, stick to me now because this is bear area.
Yeah.
That was
but
also
he didn't
cool.
have a rifle either.
He didn't have a rifle or a knife or anything. And I said to him,
but he was from New Zealand.
They don't have bears.
No.
So almost when we went home to the camp, we spotted elk.
Yeah.
And he said, that's your last chance. And we went up the hill again, and we sneaked all the way in, and I came into 33 meters.
Yeah.
And I could only take one shot. I could see a little bit of the elk, and I stood on one foot on a big a stone, and the guy was holding my back on one foot, and then I draw my bow and shot. So that was a really cool shot, and I hit it, and it went 20 meters and fell there.
That's an amazing story.
That was so cool. That was so cool. The coolest experience ever. But a little annoying thing was after we shot this one, we saw the big elk.
Okay.
Of a male, actually. But it is what it is. It was a cool hunt.
So this was a female elk.
This was a female, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we went there, we saw the arrow, and there was blood on it. And they said, that's good. Just leave it. Because the camp is right up there, so just leave it for the night. And I don't know why he said that, but I think it was because of bears.
Yeah.
Because it was dark then.
Yeah.
And there was bears in the country, in the area.
Yeah.
And we had a bow to protect us. And I think he wanted to go away from the elk.
Yeah.
So we came home, and when we went home there, I said, I really want to go home to my brother-in-law now, because, you know, I felt like he was a little bit afraid of being alone in bear country. And then the guy just looked at me and said, Steph, you have a bloody arrow on your back and on your hands, and we're walking here in bear country. I think you should be more afraid about yourself than Michael in the camp. And I said to him, oh, okay. I sneaked up and I said, I'll walk in front of you. No, you go behind me and watch and just light out. And if you see eyes, just tell me.
Just run.
Oh, and I was so scared. And I said, Marcel, what do you have with you? You have a gun or anything? And said, no, you just use your bow. I was like, what? So I'm supposed to protect us. But, you know,
it's a black bear.
Yeah, black bears. Yeah. Yeah, the ones you don't want to meet.
Yeah.
The black bears. Yeah, so there was all of that, all the feelings there, the fear, the excitement, the adrenaline, and you're totally exhausted. And I was so physically hard doing that. So that was the coolest hunt I've ever been on. And I can't wait to get back there. And the next day we went down to the elk, and she died pretty quickly, but the bear had been hit there, actually. Okay. So, yeah. And yeah, we carried up the elk up the mountain.
Yeah.
It was terrible. It was so heavy.
Yeah.
But it was a cool experience.
Amazing.
It was really, really cool.
Amazing.
Really cool.
I know that you're hunting geese for like 50 days per year, something like that.
Yeah, maybe 40 or 50 hunts.
40 or 50 hunts.
In a season.
What is it about goose hunting that you really like?
I mean, goose hunting is totally different from bow hunting, totally. Yeah. But it's a lot about knowledge, and a lot of goose bow hunting as well. But this is so much about knowledge and knowing what to do and do it exactly at the right time.
Yeah.
And it's teamwork, totally teamwork, but it's under total stress.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the geese comes in the morning, and you have about an hour or something where it's just, they just come in, and you have to be totally ready, and the decoys has to be the right spot, or you just end up have to move everything.
Yeah.
But in the spot when they come in, that
how many decoys do you? The decoys for the Swedish listeners is bulvaner.
Bulvaner.
How many do you normally use?
It depends on the area and if it's a hot spot or whatever. Yeah. So you can't really say that. It also depends on what species you hunt.
Okay.
Because for gray lakes, you don't have to have that many bulvanas out there.
Yeah.
It's more about how good they look, how lifelike they look, and how good you camouflaged and totally disappeared from the ground. Because they are the smartest goose to hunt.
Yeah.
What I love about goose hunting is that it's every detail counts.
Yeah.
And we have had hunters with us, 80 years old, that has shot every animal you possibly can shoot in Africa many, many times. And they come there and they have never shot a goose. Never. Because it's not easy to shoot a goose.
No.
And after a hunt, we take them on a good, we take them on a hot spot.
Yeah.
Then maybe shoot 100 geese or something.
Yeah.
And after that, they say, man, this has been the best hunt I've ever been on.
Yeah.
And I should have done this many years ago. Because the feeling that you get when the geese, instinctively, so careful geese, comes in to your flock formation, and you can see they're just locked. They don't know you're there. And they have a flight line straight in towards you. And you shoot them on 10 meters. That's just, I mean, the feeling, you have to try it. You get totally addicted to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so cool. It's
how
really cool.
Is it? Do you eat them?
We grind them.
Yeah.
A lot.
Do you burgers have goose out. Burgers?
Yeah. Yeah, and lasagna and everything. I mean, we eat them a lot, so I don't want to make a whole goose every time.
No.
So it's just easy everyday meat.
Yeah.
And we have butchers also that take a lot of our, because we shoot a lot of them.
Yeah.
When people get a little bit, you know, when they see our big parades, they're like, oh, you shoot so many geese. But you have to understand the population of them is just increasing all the time.
Yeah.
And even though we shoot a lot, it just keeps on going upwards.
Yeah.
So it's you have to shoot geese, and you have to shoot geese the right way. That's how our company actually was created, because in Norway, Netherlands, and Denmark, I think it's 15 years ago or 13 years ago, they captured a lot of geese.
Yeah.
And they saw they had so much lead in their body.
Yeah.
I think it was 36% of them, all of them had something in their body.
Mm-hmm. From shooting?
From shooting. Okay. Hunters that shot at them too yeah. far up.
Yeah.
Because you can't, a goose is not easy to get down
no.
to your formation. If you have hot spots, they will go down no matter what.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't have hot spots. Or a lot of fields, maybe they have the geese land on their field, but the next day they land on neighbors.
Yeah.
And how do you get them in? You shoot them when they fly over.
Yeah.
And that's on 60 meters maybe.
Yeah.
So at that time, Denmark said, and Netherlands shot the goose, the hunting down straight away. And Denmark said, well, you have 2 years to change it.
Yeah.
2 years. And that's where they contacted my dad and my uncle. And said, we are, you know, you're goose nerds. And we've seen you hunt geese and from American style. And, you know, would you be willing to teach people about your methods? And they did. And in about 2 years, the numbers came down to 12%. So they started this holding lectures and showing people, making YouTube films. They've been hunting geese for many years.
Yeah.
And they got them down to 5-10 meters and shoot them there in their yeah. formation. They called them in and yeah. had the good decoys. And after that, our company, of course, just exploded.
And your company is called DKY.
Yeah, DKY, yeah.
DKY.
Yeah, it's actually, it stands for DK as Denmark,
yeah.
Waterfall Archery Import, because they were waterfall hunters yeah. and archery bow hunting.
Uh-huh.
So they were one of the first, you know, to hunt.
Okay. And what you do? You I know that you specialize on goose hunting with
yeah.
Calls and decoys yeah. and so on.
Yeah, we make equipment for goose hunting.
Yeah.
And but the goose hunting change all the time because the geese changes and the weather change, and geese are so smart birds. So when you've been hunting them. And as Sweden is still in the progress, I mean, I don't think it's a goose hunting country, Sweden, as much as Denmark actually is now. But when you've been hunting geese a lot with the methods that we do, actually, yeah. For an example, we hunt them as swans. The goose will find out over time because it can...
Sorry, what do you mean? You hunt them as swans?
Swans, yeah. We after November, when the swans come to Denmark, this yeah. We cover ourselves and use decoy swans and cover us as swans.
So you dress up like a swan?
Yeah, yeah. We yeah. lay in blinds. It yeah. looks like swans. And then you call them in and they see the swans from a far out.
Yeah.
Because they know the white spots on the fields are swans. Yeah. And that tells the goose there's food.
Yeah.
And there's no predators or anything.
Yeah.
Here is safe. So they come directly to your swans and go down. But when you've hunted like this for years and a goose can become 25 years old,
yeah.
one of them or many of them will think, not because they think, but they have their instinct telling yeah. them the swans hurt. So we have to be a little bit careful about the swans. So they now we've experienced they don't go directly into the swans. They do, still do in Sweden.
What about the real swans? They have to think like, where are all the goose?
Yeah, but the thing we see now is they fly yeah. and they land 100 meters from them.
Okay.
And then when they feel safe, they slowly walk towards them.
Yeah, okay.
So they're smart birds. Yeah. And they're not easy to hunt. And that's what I love so much about goose hunting is you have to change your methods yeah. all the time.
In Sweden, we mainly focus on gray goose and Canadian goose.
Yeah.
How is it in Denmark? What different geese do you hunt?
We have the speckled belly, lisse goose. I don't think you have
You
them
can't there. See me, but I look like a question mark.
But that's a really, really beautiful small goose.
Is it the one with white cheeks?
No. That's the barnacle goose.
Barnacle, okay. Mm-hmm.
The small ones that they bark like a dog.
And we have that in Sweden. We hunt that, but it's yeah. a very short period of time.
Yeah.
But except for skyddsjakt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we have the speckled belly goose, really, really beautiful goose, a small one, and we don't have that many of them.
Sädgås kanske?
No, that I want to. Sädgås, no. We're not allowed to shoot that. But we can shoot speckled bellies, gray leg, and barnacle goose, Canadian geese, and pink-footed geese.
Okay.
And in Jutland, they have a lot of pink-footed geese.
And for all the listeners, if you want to understand this in Swedish, then you have to translate yourself, because I don't understand.
No.
So, but no. The ones who's interested, they will find out.
And we have a lot of different species.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, yeah.
Which one is the easiest to hunt? Is it Canadian goose?
Yeah, Canadian goose, but you have it easier here in Sweden because they come here first.
Okay.
And you shoot at the ones that are still, you know, not that clever.
No.
But we get them down and they're shot at a lot. And we don't have the winters like you do. So it's actually, it's started to get more difficult in Denmark to shoot a Canadian goose. First of all, we don't see them that much. And when they come, they're shot at.
Yeah.
They have been shot at, or they're not family members. You don't say that, but their flocks, some of their flocks is dead. So they get more careful when they come down to us. That's what we experience now. Back in the days, they were easy.
Yeah.
I mean, really easy. Some people call it the stupid goose. It's not a stupid goose at all. It's a beautiful animal and it is clever, but it's not as clever as the gray, like for an example.
Okay.
We always say, if you can shoot a gray-leg goose, you can shoot all of them. So learn how to hunt a gray-leg goose, and then you can hunt all of them.
And what about the barnacle goose, vitkindad goose?
Yeah, we hunt them in Denmark. It's not still new. We have so many of them, so many. You do two here as well. And they're just increasing all the time, increasing. So, but we found out that we shot them in the beginning, and we found out we shot... For some, that's a lot. We shot 20, 30 a time. But we really didn't really have luck with them. They were difficult to hunt. And then we thought about, you know, Gabriel, actually, my son.
Yeah.
He looks at all those YouTube videos all the time, goose hunting. And we saw him looking at a snow goose hunt from America.
Yeah.
And we saw it's about similar. They come in big, big, huge flocks. And we had our decoys. We had gray legs and barnacles, a little bit of barnacles, and then we had some Canadians. And we couldn't really get them down. And then we thought, maybe let's try to just hunt them like they do in America, like we did with every other stuff, like get our inspiration from America.
Yeah.
So we hunt a lot of decoys.
Yeah.
So you don't have to use that good decoys as you do with the gray legs, flocked and all that. You just have a lot of decoys out because they will see that from a far distance and they will go to the others.
And how many is a lot?
200.
200
would be good.
That's a lot.
Yeah, but that's not a lot for a barnacle.
No, okay.
So that would be good. And we use windsocks and all those kind of cheaper decoys. So you just get a lot.
Take so much space.
Not so much space, and it doesn't cost that
plastic
much.
Plastic ones are,
then
you need a truck.
The supreme goose we make for the gray legs are they're heavy, but they're so, so lifelike. And they're the best decoys on the market. And they work, but they're so heavy and they're expensive.
Yeah.
So we came up with this idea that just on barnacles, you just use a lot of decoys and cover yourself good. And then just attract the big formations.
Yeah.
And that just works so good. So that's what I love about goose hunting, is that you have to all the time change method, think about new ideas. How can we get really good at this? Because what goose hunting really is about is that you don't want to shoot at a goose when it's too far up. Because that will just close down the goose hunting someday.
With most of my guests, I normally ask them what they have in their gun safe.
Uh-huh.
But let's focus on the bows.
Yeah.
Do you have more than one bow?
Yeah, I have three bows right now.
What's the difference from?
Yeah, but because me and my dad, we shot competition just for fun and to practice to become better bow hunters. So I have one for competition, and then I have one for, just in case.
Yeah.
The other one, something happens to the other one. Yeah. I always travel with two bows.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to go to Africa and something happens to your bow. You can't shoot anything. So I have three bows. One is for competition. And I don't have them in a safe, in a safety case because...
You don't have to have that?
No, the bow is not a weapon, considered a weapon. It's actually more like a tool. Like when you travel with them like you would with skis.
Okay.
So I think that's maybe it will come someday because it is a deadly weapon.
Yeah.
But you can actually just drive with your car and the bow in it and a broadhead on the arrow and whatever.
Yeah.
So that's, that will probably change soon.
Yeah.
I think.
And if we have to wrap it up, and I think if we look a bit into the future, what would you say, do you have any dreams left, something on your bucket list, or what do you see yourself as a huntress in 10 years time?
I want to experience as much as possible. I don't know, I have some animals I would really like to shoot or hunt, but I just want to experience as much as I can.
What animals?
Like I said, I would love to shoot a moose with bow, like call it in. And a grizzly bear with bow as well. That would be cool. And I've been to Colorado. I shot an elk there, but it was a female.
Yeah.
So I would like to shoot an elk, a male. Yeah. That would be cool as well. And go to Greenland as well.
Yeah.
Shoot animals there as much as possible. I like experience new area, new countries, new animals, hunt them. It's different from each animal. So I want to hunt as much as possible. I just love it.
I think your friend Jonas, he's been to Greenland.
Yeah.
I've just followed him on Instagram.
Uh-huh.
He would be a really cool guest in the show, I think.
Yeah, I think so. He has a lot of cool stories about Greenland. Really
cool.
And
he's a great photographer as well.
He's a really good photographer and he's a really good hunter.
Yeah.
He's a bow hunter as well.
Yeah.
And I've hunted with him, as you know, and he's a really, really good hunter. Yeah. I like his way of looking at hunting, and he's also teaching his kids about it. And he's a cool guy, Jonas. Yeah. He really is.
Yeah. I wish you all the best in the future.
Thank you. Thank you.
With bow hunting and everything.
Yeah, thank you. Same to you.
Thank you so much for talking to me. And it's been a lovely chat because it's... so many things that we've talked about that I didn't know almost anything about. bow hunting for me is totally new. And I hope that the listeners out there are as inspired as I am from this conversation.
So. I hope you will get bow hunting here someday. I really hope.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Take care.
Yeah, same to you. Thank you.
Och stort tack till alla er som har lyssnat såklart. Nästa vecka, då är vi tillbaka på torsdag, precis som vanligt, med en alldeles ny, rykande, häftig och härlig gäst. Vi hörs om en vecka. Hej!
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.